Hello, and welcome to the Full Circle Healing Podcast, where we merge modern cutting-edge science with traditional healing wisdom and everything in between to help you come full circle back to your original natural state of health and well-being. I'm your host, Michael, and over the past 15 years, I've helped hundreds of thousands of people find the information, practices, tools, resources, and experts they needed to find their way back to optimal health. Our guest in this episode is Dr. Christine Schaffner, a pioneer in next-generation bioregulatory terrain-focused medicine. Dr. Schaffner is a board-certified naturopathic doctor who's helped thousands of people recover from chronic or complex illnesses. Through online summits, her Spectrum of Health podcast, a network of eminence health clinics, and renowned online programs, Dr. Schaffner goes beyond biological medicine, pulling from all systems of medicine and healing modalities, helping patients reclaim their wellness and reveal their brightest light. With her diverse skill set, Dr. Schaffner seeks to improve access, outcomes, and speed of recovery for patients struggling with chronic, complex, and mystery illnesses who travel from all over the world to work with her. In this episode, you'll learn the main underlying factors contributing to the drastic increase in sensitivity to food, mold, toxins, EMFs, pathogens, and everything else that we're witnessing today. You'll learn what combination of symptoms and chronic conditions are skyrocketing as a result of this increased sensitivity, what mast cells are, what role they play in this phenomenon, and why starting there can be the key to healing for many people. And you'll learn about cutting-edge therapies and foundational practices people can implement to return their body to a state of safety, reduce sensitivity, and reverse chronic disease, and a ton more. I've always loved talking to Dr. Schaffner. It's always a huge learning experience for me every time I connect with her. So she's on the forefront of cutting-edge therapies, tools, modalities. I always learn about something new, and this helps the most difficult patients finally find relief. And if you'd like some tools to help calm your nervous and immune system, as you'll learn about in this episode, head over to rebelhealth.co/breathing to grab my Breathing for Nervous System Regulation ebook that will introduce you to a number of simple, effective practices you can implement right away. Now let's dive in with Dr. Schaffner. Hey, Dr. Christine Schaffner, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, so great to be here, Michael. I'm so glad you're doing this and that I'm here with you again.
Likewise. And we almost like forgot to hit record, which happens every time that we connect, and we spend way too much time just talking. And then we're like, oh yeah, we have to record a thing. So
I always love my Michael update, you know, it's so fun.
I love updating you, and I love hearing what you're up to as well. And our path or linear, like kind of been running parallel a lot in what we were interested in and where our focus is going and, you know, what topics, kind of from like more traditional naturopathic kind of functional medicine and then going onto the other side of the more esoteric or spiritual or energetic or quantum. And so it's always fun to be like, what have you been up to for the last bunch of months? And it's always something similar, like hearing the same people or similar books or similar topics. Yeah. So it's super fun.
We're tuning into the same wavelengths.
Yeah. We're being pulled by the same thing, whatever that may be. Yep. And we have, today we're going to talk about, I think something that a lot of our audience in the in community at Rebel Health and the people who listen to these kind of shows can really relate to is that everybody seems to be getting a lot more sensitive, and I don't mean emotionally sensitive, although that's also probably true because it's the same, but sensitive to their environment, sensitive to pathogens, sensitive to mold, sensitive to infection, sensitive to solar flares, which we just talked about, which is making the aurora borealis everywhere. And everyone's like, oh, look at the pretty sky. And then why is that happening? And it's happening because there's massive solar flares are sensitive to EMFs, sensitive to foods that didn't used to bother people, sensitive to just fill in the blank, right? And 10 years ago, when I was working with a lot of health clients, those people were rare. They were, you know, one out of every 10 people that came to me. 9 out of 10 were like, I want to lose weight, or I have acne, or I have knee pain or something like that. And 1 out of 10 was like, I have this litany of symptoms. I've been to 9 doctors. Everybody tells me I'm fine. I have all this stuff wrong with me. I've tried these 92 things. Can you fix me? Now, that's like 50-50 or more in favor of the latter person. Yeah. And a lot of them find their way here. So what the hell is going on?
Yeah. It's a good question. That's like, welcome to my practice, right? So if you want to hang out with me anytime, you'll see those patients. You know, each patient is the patient you describe. And I agree with you that, you know, we are seeing also this not only complexity, but also sensitivity at the same time. And so I've been practicing over 14 years now, and I have the same thought. You know, I remember when I was training, there'd be like one out of even like 50 patients who, you know, you give them a drop of something and they, you know, would fall apart, or, you know, they could feel the cell phone like five doors down, you know, like, and we were like, you know, or a whiff of perfume and they'd have a seizure, you know, and we'd be like, okay, that's interesting. We totally believe them, but this was clearly beyond our explanation at the time. And then I'm finding like most of my practice, probably 9 out of 10 people I see have this profound sensitivity. And, you know, there's this cognitive dissonance for a lot of people who are even maybe in more a conventional framework or even new to this work, because many of these people don't look as sick as they feel. And then you see them have these reactions. A lot of people can be like, oh, that's psychosomatic, or that's in their head, or how can that happen? And I think we've filled in that black box more and more. I don't think we're complete yet, but there is a model that seems to work as I approach sensitivity in my, you know, practice. And, you know, we can, of course, unpack that. And, you know, this also is not only understanding it and, you know, this framework we can go into, but there's this whole other process of treatment. You know, you have to get really creative and very in tune with, you know, what is going to, you know, help that person. And that this is, you know, really, you know, the long game, and not, you know, like we got to give this person a hammer and, you know, they're going to get better in a week. It's just a different approach to healing. And so I'm happy to dive into what I'm seeing. I think.
Yeah. Like, how does this kind of, you mentioned, we kind of joked like before we went on air that we would shuffle those people off to the person who fixes or helps those people. And you were always one of those people, but I'm sure that there's like an influx or way more of those people now. And so practitioners who weren't specialists in really, really complex illness are having to up their game and figure out this stuff and get caught up. And so other than, you know, giving somebody one drop of something and they fall apart, like, how is this really showing up? Like, when you get to, what are the most common either symptoms or like life experience? How are those people experiencing life when they show up with you? And then, what do you find? Because you do, I mean, a lot of what I would consider normal or conventional functional medicine testing, but then you also have a lot of additional ways to assess people that are kind of outside the box. So, like, how does it show up subjectively in their experience? And then how is it showing up in your assessments of them and your diagnostics and what you're actually finding is going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this is kind of a conglomeration of like the average person that I see. So they are, as we just mentioned, sensitivity to rhythms and cycles of nature. So they're sensitive to the full and new moon. Even before they understand that, they know that. They are, especially this year, we've had an increase in solar activity where the sun emits these solar winds, the solar kind of, you know, energy that hits the field line resonances of Mother Earth and changes this resonant frequency that we're used to being in communication with. And so it can feel like we've lost that connection. We're not grounded. There's just a different energy that we're experiencing on, you know, the Earth, and that can affect these people significantly. You know, most of them have, you know, insomnia, brain fog. They're highly anxious. They have tons of gut issues. They have bloating. bloating, gas, constipation, sluggishness, often pain. They can have all sorts of different skin symptoms, rashes, hives, even when they eat certain foods. They have an awareness of how the cell phone makes them feel. They can't, be by a computer too long or hold a cell phone because there's this increase of symptoms or vibrational sensations that they feel. They often have had a mold exposure and are profoundly sensitive to smells and foods and, mold. They can, we don't need a mold test. We can just put one of those people right in the house. They know in a moment that there's mold in there. They get out of there and you have to unwind that process. They often have, as I mentioned, many diagnoses and many, symptoms that apply to those diagnoses, but they can't find the treatment strategy. Every time they do the treatment that is supposed to heal their condition, they just get worse or don't have forward momentum. They find that they're very intolerant to things. So that's like the average kind of person that I see. I'm sure there's more things that I forgot to fill in the gaps, but it gives you
That's enough for most people to deal with, I think.
Yeah. So
it's a pretty decent list.
Yeah. So, you hold that container for, just seeing that person and acknowledging their experience, because that is actually step one of the healing process, because these people have seen dozens and dozens of doctors and been gaslit over and over again and had to be a profound advocate for themselves. And I just really just admire this, determination and survival instinct that we all have, that we know that we can be well. And when we don't have health, I mean, that is, you could have all the money, the opportunity, all the access to life. But if you don't have your health, the health is our great equalizer. We all know when we don't feel well and how we are not in our fullness of life and our potential that we came here to experience. And it's very devastating on many levels. And so the model and, really that, I mentioned, if we're going to say kind of how I treat people. It's,
Hold on. I want to get, that's how they are experiencing everything. When you say they have a mold exposure often, but what other, for the people who want to know, why that stuff is happening, when you dig and you explore, either with lab testing or other testing or other ways of assessment or other things like that, what are you finding clinically that you can use to explain to someone, why do I have these 17 symptoms that seem unrelated? Or why can I go with this group of people to do that thing? And then I feel terrible and they don't feel terrible. Or why out of my family did only I get sick? Or why, so what are you finding as far as more tangible, objective things to explain that?
Absolutely. So I think this term gets overused and is probably not as understood, but I really have studied in this framework, and there's a complexity here that, as I mentioned, if we describe the medicine I practice, I would say it's likened to more bioregulatory medicine and terrain medicine. And when we think about terrain medicine, there are these really two systems of regulation, which are two systems of communication. And if they're not working well, the body usually does not, work, in an optimal level way, rather. And it's the autonomic nervous system and the fascia. And in these systems that really touch every part of our system, we have, many different, immune cells. One that is getting a lot of press these days, and this is kind of filling in the black box of what has been happening for a long time, is looking at our mast cells. And our mast cells are these cells that traverse our mucosa and our epithelium and our connective tissue. They're abundant in the extracellular matrix and the lymphatic system. And their job is to be a first line of defense and alert us if there is a foreign allergen or a poison or something that we need to have an acute response and then quickly, move on from that acute response as we're healing. And what we found is that because our bodies are bombarded and what makes itself from our blood into our lymph and into our connective tissue and affects our nerves are these overwhelming factors that we've touched on, There's mold and fungi and mycotoxins. There's parasitic infections. There's Lyme and co-infections, especially Bartonella. And when we talk about what we're talking about, there's viruses and retroviruses. There's spike protein. There's SARS-CoV-2 now in the terrain. There's 5G. There is, these rhythms that change our, gauge of our environment. And all of these things that I just said out loud all impact the mast cell. And the mast cell is now becoming more hypervigilant. And because it's not just looking for a bee sting or, an anaphylactic reaction to a peanut, it's looking at, all of these things that are bombarding the mast cell because the mast cell cannot escape not sensing them because they're filled in the terrain and the extracellular matrix, that these mast cells, their threshold of releasing over 200 mediators, histamine is one of them, becomes less and less and less. So they become hypervigilant and they throw out their, immune reaction time and time again throughout the day. And so what I found is that you cannot have a conversation or you cannot have a path forward with these folks unless you give five or six things that stabilize mast cells, support H1 and H2 receptors throughout the brain and the gut before you can even approach treatment. And it seems kind of like, okay, sure. We know that already, but I don't think people have put it together in the ways that we'll talk about, because it is the single greatest thing that I've seen to help move through and actually treat the underlying cause. Mast cell is not the underlying cause. Mast cell is a reaction to the root causes that have overwhelmed the body and the terrain.
And that makes total sense, because the mast cells are just doing their job, but there's not supposed to be that much stuff for them to react to. Yeah. And so then it throws the whole system off. And then they, you mentioned the threshold of their reaction, of them triggering their reaction goes down. And so things that generally wouldn't trigger a reaction or justify a reaction do. Because those are the people, I react to everything. I'm down to like seven foods. I can't take this thing, this supplement that helps everybody, makes me have hives, this da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. Because like we were talking before we went on air, that the last, I don't know, now it's been 6 years for me, have done a number on my nervous system to where I jump from sounds. And when the baby falls down, I gasp and I don't even do it consciously. And like, yeah. I'm trying not to like react like that. And my nervous system is so heightened from... Yeah. A bunch of really stressful and traumatic things happening that it's almost like the old outdated term that I think used to be used when I was a kid was like shell shock, but yeah. Which was from people coming back from war. But with the mast cells, it's the same kind of thing, right? Like they're dealing with this thing and 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 this thing. And then all of a sudden this little thing comes and it's like, fine, but okay, that thing too. And this thing and this thing and this thing. Yeah. And so what you're saying is like, you need to get it to chill out, get them, yeah. that system to like, relax, but if it's still seeing all these things it thinks is danger, it's tough, right? Like it's tough to get it to. So what does that look like? How do you get somebody's system to calm down?
Yeah. And I want to add one kind of compared to what you just said. So I know we can talk about this on this podcast that, there's also trauma in the fascia and the autonomic nervous system and the limbic brain and in the field, in many other places, I'm sure, in our system. And so, the trauma that is in the, the water and the fascia and in the lymphatics, there is something called fascial memory also, I believe, is a signal or a trigger that can also impact mast cells. I haven't dove into the literature, but I know there's probably some psychoneuro immunoendocrinology literature that could probably link that. Mast cells actually surround the nerves. So a lot of, pain or peripheral neuropathy can be a mast cell related, trigger. Mast cells surround the vagus nerve. So if the vagus nerve is surrounded by lymphatics that are full of, pathogens and mast cells that are responding to those, the mast cells can actually also be responding and sensing and affecting the autonomic nervous system. So I just wanted
interesting.
That
to hear the fascial memory and the trauma and the fascia. That's pretty, I don't, I can't cite studies right now, but I've done a lot of somatic based trauma work. And the fact that, or the idea that trauma is whatever language you want to use, stored, trapped, exists, whatever, in fascia is not a, it's like accepted as fact in that world of like somatic trauma therapy. And that sometimes when someone's getting a certain type of body work done or doing certain types of movement during a somatic practice or like a somatic therapy session or a breathwork session, that the breathwork I facilitate uses a lot of movement, and people will have like wild emotional expressions that will come forward that are absolutely completely 1,000% unrelated to anything that's happening right now. And if you don't explain to them this concept, which you're talking about it more from like a biochemistry, physiological, and how those things affect other cascades and mast cells in the immune system, I'm talking about how it just shows up like visually. Yeah. People yeah. freak out because they're like, why am I sobbing right now? And it's like, yeah. when in your life should you have been sobbing and you were unable to?
Yes.
Is the question that's more accurate to ask right now. And then they can always remember. Yeah. Then they always remember. Or like, why is there so much rage right now? When did you, when would, should have there been rage and you had to suppress the rage? When, and you ask that question and they can almost always, there's like a visual memory that flashes with the emotion that comes out of the,
yes.
the movement from the fascia. And what you're saying is that probably same thing that I'm seeing in a more subjective way has like a actual biochemical responses that are interweaving with the immune system and causing all kinds of havoc, especially when it's not coming out like that, yes. when it's still in there.
Yeah.
Because the fascia is, we could talk, I mean, I think we have done a whole interview on fascia before, because
I
first started learning about fascia, I was like, what? Like,
yeah.
Why? I have a master's degree in exercise physiology. You know how much I learned about fascia? They were like, oh, it's in muscles. And I'm like, it's the wrap around the muscles that you have to pull off the chicken when you eat it. That's what I learned at like a master's level. And then I started doing trauma work and learned from a biodynamic craniosacral therapist.
Oh, cool.
That fascia is like a substance that's a texture that we barely have words to describe that runs through every single cell, tissue, organ system, every bone, every part of the body, and it communicates, it carries information, it carries this, it's electronic, like it's electric conducive. Yes. And we think that communication happens, like all this stuff. And I'm laying on this table with this guy doing like literally nothing to me and making my whole universe go wacky, because biodynamic craniosacral is wild for anybody who's never done it. He was like barely touching me and I was going through like all sorts of really cool experiences. And I'm like, is this legit? So I started to look it up. And that was right. I think we had a conversation about it. And I was like, oh my God, fascia.
Yeah.
And so I freak out anytime it gets brought up. So that's, sorry, my ADD just kicked in and I got excited about fascia. But
it's such a big part of, I think, this, you know, up-leveling of our consciousness of our body. And I really, you know, I see the same thing in my practice. I mean, I use a different tool. I mean, I love myself experiencing craniosacral or a network chiropractic. And, you know, there are many like paths to Rome. But
yeah.
I use neural therapy in my office, and, you know, we, you know, work with injections in the fascia, and it's a very, you know, kind of accelerated way to move emotion. Or, you know, I keep on, you know, I've said for years, you know, we actually, you know, release these, you know, vibrational patterns that have been stored that no longer serve us. And I've been reframing it a little bit. I think it's exactly what you're saying too. We become aware of those parts of ourselves that we compartmentalize to see them and bring them whole and integrate them again. You know, that we kind of had a spot of ourselves or our emotional body and the fascia walled off and compartmentalized. And we know that health is wholeness. It's community. medication. It's not, you know, compartmentalization. That's what cancer does. That's what senescent cells does. And that's what trauma does. So I think it's just, you know, observing, you know, compassionately, you know, experiencing and, you know, becoming whole and seen again, you know, rather than just thinking of release and it's left my body and then I'm fine now. It was like an entity. It's more like a, you know, wow, that was part of who we are, you know, that we didn't want to see. No,
that's I've never heard it explained in that way. But yeah, it's, I love that. And it's not something we need to get rid of. It's something we need to encompass. Like it needs to, like when it's being expressed, it's not going away. It's being heard. Like there's a different way to view that, that is much more holistic versus like allopathic in a sense of like that emotion isn't a disease to cure. It's a thing to be expressed and to be felt and to be heard. Yeah. And I love that you compared the trauma and the cancer, like health is wholeness, not compartmentalization. The things that compartmentalize are trauma and cancer. And yeah, I'm sure we could figure out others too, but they're all not conducive to well-being. And that bringing everything back whole, and you're talking about parts of ourselves and those types of things, like that's also a direction that a lot of the trauma and emotional work is going to, with like Dick Schwartz and IFS therapy and parts therapy. And that, and he took things that have been done for a really long time and repackaged them as a modern modality of therapy. But if you, I mean, even you go back to like shamanistic type practices or bringing parts of ourselves that have been outcast into back into wholeness. And so there's a million different ways to talk about it. Neurotherapy has always been really interesting to me. I learned about it from you a couple of years ago because I have a weird scar on my head that whatever. And you're like, you need to go to Switzerland. And at the time I lived in California and I was like, yeah, right, I'm going to go to Switzerland. Now Switzerland is like right over there. So I might need the info. And I was scared of it because I'm scared of needles, but somebody assured me they're really tiny needles and it's not super painful. So
yeah, it's you know, this is just a technique we learn in respiratory medicine, and neural therapy, you know, it's been around for over 100 years now. And it's this idea that we can work with the fascia and scars and ganglia, which are kind of centers of a high level of energy and electricity in the nervous system. And that we can, you know, basically restore coherence to the tissue. So the idea is, with the, you know, kind of two things that I do the most in my practice are scar therapy and segmental therapy. And scar therapy is this idea, again, that this is kind of the obvious place where emotion gets stored in the body. So when you look at the, you know, pictures, I talked about this in the fascia, you know, talk that we did, that there's a French hand surgeon that you can find on YouTube, and he really visualized living fascia rather than, you know, our view of dead fascia. And we always see a different story, right, in the living body. And he's, you know, has these beautiful pictures. I've been doing neural therapy for probably 13, you know, maybe 12 years before I read this book. And I finally saw, you know, it made sense on a whole different layer, that, you know, scar tissue is not the same as our original fascial fabric. It's actually a plug in the drain. You know, it's denser, more regular, less mobile, you know, as scar tissue or adhesions can form. And we can, you know, also liken to it like a traffic jam in the fascial network and the fabric. And it can become this, as Louisa Williams says, this island of turbulence that can trap toxicants, pathogens, and emotion. And emotion's a big one. And they're all kind of interlinked as well. And so when we do, you know, I've seen this so many times, as it's a kind of a way into the, you know, the body, that when we, you know, the stars align for when the injection is done and the person feels, you know, safe enough, that there can be a letting go of this emotion that I've kind of shared, that is more this, you know, wow, that was in me. And look at that, what I was holding and not witnessing. And, you know, I'm going to reintegrate that so that there can be, you know, movement in that tissue again. And it's profound, you know, what we see. So the scars, you know, hold trauma. They hold stagnation. Again, it's an area of compartmentalization and not integration in the body. And then segmental therapy. I call acupuncture on steroids because we work with the visceral cutaneous reflex. And so we put these little wheels or, you know,
what's it called?
Segmental therapy. It's okay. A type of neural therapy where we put these different like circular wheels of procaine in the skin, and procaine helps to, you know, break down scar tissue. It helps to increase blood flow and lymphatic flow. It also helps to bring more negative charge to the body. And by doing these little wheels over an organ or an area that's has stagnation, we're working with the deeper, basically nerves that surround the capillaries, that surround the organ. So we're increasing blood flow and movement. So it's a way of creating, you know, really movement in, you know, in the body. So common patterns I use are segmental therapy over the crown of the head. That can be helpful if you've ever had a head injury, if you have insomnia, if you have hair loss, if you have brain fog, that we need more lymphatic activity, you know, in your brain. We do the sinus pattern. That's a really big one that everybody hates, but always asks to do again because it helps so much. But it's different points along the face that help to open up drainage in the sinuses, which can be an interference field. We can do the lymphatic network along the neck and the back of the neck and around the clavicle or the collarbone. We can inject the tonsils inside the mouth and also do the tonsil scars. We could do the
what is being injected?
Procaine.
Procaine.
Yeah, procaine is it's a local, you know,
anesthetic, right?
Yeah, and it's we use it, you know, it's compounded.
So it like relaxes the.
Yeah, it has like, you know, it there is a relaxation effect, of course, but there are these other properties of procaine that it brings blood flow to, you know, usually the area is red where we inject because we're stimulating blood flow. Okay. We're stimulating lymphatic drainage. It also, because of the nature of procaine, it actually helps to increase negative charge. Negative charge is health in the body. Yeah. Where an area, this is kind of like the cell voltage idea. Dr. Tennant wrote a great book about it, that healthy cells have a certain resting potential of, you know, what a healthy membrane potential would be in a healthy cell. And when cells get sick, they lose voltage. And so they, you know, lose that negative charge. And so it helps to restore, you know, just negative charge in the body as well. I'm sure there's an exclusion zone water effect that we haven't been able to look at.
That's really fascinating too. I've recently talked to a couple quantum biology circadian nerds that kind of blow my mind with some stuff that nobody's talking about regarding light and exclusion. Yeah.
So water
yeah. And like infrared. Yeah. If somebody wants to dive into that, the podcast episode, I believe of this podcast, it's number 7, 8, or 9, somewhere in that range. It's with Carrie Bennett, who does a lot of quantum biology stuff. And we only get in because that's such a wide topic. Whenever I talk to her, I get all excited and we end up talking like 30 minutes about like sunscreen or like one thing because there's so many different aspects of like, but we talked about some really cool stuff with light and exclusion zone water and how the, on the quantum people think like, oh, our cells run on ATP and like, yes, on a biochemical level, our body runs on ATP. But if you, she said like, what are the things that make the ATP run on? And it's electricity. Everything's electricity, voltage. It's negative charge. Like, you know, she's like, if you go smaller and smaller and smaller, you're going to get to a point where our body is no different than anything else. And it's protons and electrons, and it's going to run on negative charge, which is electrons. She's like, you're electric. Your body's electric. And when it's sick is when it doesn't have that. And I'm grossly oversimplifying things, but. Yeah. This is something that I never had heard of in 10 years of doing it pretty detailed functional medicine research. And like,
she is great at summarizing a lot of beautiful work from the structured water folks. Yeah. And, you know, water is just a really deep topic. I think we're just really scratching the surface with that. But, you know, our fascia actually delivers exclusion zone water to our cells and to our tissues. So it's going to help to, you know, it actually is negative charge by nature. And so then, you know, in the extracellular matrix, we also have these proteoglycans that hold negative charge and hold electrons as well. And then that extracellular environment, as we know, is interconnected to the intracellular environment. And there's this negative charge building up in the cell. And, you know, Carrie probably beautifully shared of how that is related to those pool of electrons, you know, are basically, you know, going through the electron transport chain and making ATP and metabolic water, which is the deuterium depleted water in our bodies that really fuel life, right? And, you know, when you get real trippy, you know, water is the medium for vibration in the body. And I think really where I feel like we're going to be going is to understand the organization and the geometry of our water and how that's up level kind of source code for our biochemistry. This is sonocytology and, you know, this work is, you know, looking at, you know, this interconnection between sound, light, and water. And I think that is really, how we are always sensing and responding and changing. And it's also how we have the power to really shift in an instant when we're in these higher states of consciousness or these coherent states of consciousness, or we go to a sound bath or drink this structured coherent water, or we're in, you know, relationship or connection with somebody else that we're in, you know, coherent state, that our this information that synchronizes our heart and our brain actually gets delivered through the fascia and then touches the cells. And then that creates more coherence in the cellular, basically environment that I think actually, you know, translates more health epigenetically and lessens disease epigenetically. So it's a profound, deep rabbit hole that I think is beautiful. Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm taking so many notes because I always learn so much when we talk. And I heard you just, what's that word? You like embodied Roland there for a second from Heart Math talking about coherence. Yeah. He doesn't usually get into like how.
No,
he'll teach what coherence is, like how they measure it and what it means and like how to access it and whatever, but not like, there's all these known benefits of coherence, which for those who don't know, Roland McCready, the guy who's the science guy at HeartMath, who does heart rate variability studies, really cool ones with really cool devices and really cool stuff. And heart rate variability is like the changes in the beat to beat rhythm of your heart, and more variance is good. Less variance is not good. And they even get into more with HeartMath than just that. But, he talks about coherence, and then he can name like all these wide ranging benefits of getting into this coherent state. But he doesn't talk about, he talks about how we measure coherence and he talks about the benefits of coherence, but he doesn't talk about like what happens in the body in the state of coherence. And like, how does that heart mind coherence like ripple out? And you're saying it essentially like ripples out from the heart. We're oversimplifying, but the fascia is what delivers to the cells that like, this is where we are at now. Like, this is what's going on now.
Yeah, I did a summit with Roland. I am friendly with him and I think he's brilliant and added so much to this.
He's fantastic. And he's like a super nice guy too.
Oh, and he's so like when we did our talks together, he's like, Christine, let's get in a state of coherence together first. And I was like, what a great idea. Mm-hmm. And like, his heart is so big. He's like you know, profound. He practices this work and I could just feel like his energy over the computer, like instantaneous. Yeah.
I was always super calm whenever I interviewed him. It's nice. Just, like he's like got a presence that's totally, he's emanating the thing that he's teaching.
Totally. And so he would probably be like mad at me for making this up, but this is my interpretation of it is that I call it heart brain fascia coherence. And so I kind of made that word up. Maybe some other people in the world have made it up too, but it just came through my inquiry. And I think we talk a lot about the autonomic nervous system. And I know Joe Dispenza, you know, is friendly with Roland and knows this aspect. And I think he talks about the autonomic nervous system delivering this information to the cell. But I really feel that it's the fascia. I think the fascia communicates faster than the nervous system. I think that we need the nervous system. It's profound and healing. But I think the fascia is our really this whole body network that is delivering information, you know, really quickly. And this is where coherence is, why it can have this whole body effect that's faster than any nerve signal. I also think that the fascia is synonymous and kind of a microcosm to the field. So it's the field within us. And, you know, again, I have a lot to learn about that statement, but I'm in a inquisitive, you know, state around that. And I try to listen to brilliant people that we were talking about before getting online, like Nassim Harriman. And I think he's the most brilliant thinker of our time around the field. And he really, you know, puts it all together. And so we're interconnected to this beautiful, you know, web of this fabric of life, you know, that we're all interconnected with. And so I think that's really where the future of medicine will be, is like, how do we tap in to this unlimited field of potential that is inside of us and all around us, and that can heal anything, you know? So I think that's, you know, really where we're going.
It's a fun rabbit hole to jump down. And I love the fascia is the field within us. And we're talking about like quantum field at this point. Like, how do we connect to everything around us? Like, what happens when we're in a certain situation? And everybody is familiar with this sensation of like that feeling when everything shifts for you, either a certain song or a certain person or a certain room or a certain experience or a certain thought. And then all of a sudden you feel completely differently than you did a second ago. And it's this like calm, peaceful feeling. And how does that happen? How does that get, where's the, what just happened? And conventional like biology can't really explain the speed at which the things happen. That was one of the things that my craniosacral therapist used to get me to believe what he was talking about, was that he got me to acknowledge that there are reactions and things that happen in the body that are faster than we can explain how they happen. That there's like instantaneous shifts. Cause I met him when I was going through training at the Luminous Awareness Institute, where they do some pretty like deep Tibetan Buddhist practices and some states of consciousness. That's where I first learned about heart math and like those kind of like practices of dropping into coherence and attunement with others who are in coherence and like feeling what that feels like. And he would say like that happens instantaneously, right? Like you experience it as instantaneous. And I said, yeah. He goes, can the body do anything instantaneous to your knowledge? Like, isn't there always like a chemical, like this says this to this, which says this to this, or this triggers this neuron to fire this neuron, which then does this neuron, like nothing happens just instantaneous. And he's like, it's the thing we don't understand that's doing it. And it's the fascia is the thing we don't understand. Like it's the, and it makes sense that like, we're not even there yet, really, outside of a few outliers, I think, in understanding the field and what quantum physics, like all of this is. So of course, I'm projecting, but of course it's going to be the part of our physiology that we really understand the least right now out of all of it. That's not even in physiology textbooks. No. I had a master's level physiology textbook where fascia had 2 pages in it.
Yeah.
And it was like the wrapping around the muscle. So it would be the thing we don't understand that connects us to the other thing that we don't quite yet understand. Yeah. Like it would make total, I don't know if that rant made any sense, but I love this conversation. I know we got to go soon because I could talk to you for like 4 more hours, but
I love it.
This type of thing, like let's loop this back in. Okay. Just real quick before we go is we went way out there. We're talking about neural therapy and segmental therapy and ways to kind of to impact the fascia. But that the fascia communicates coherence. It communicates coherence is a way to communicate safety to the body too. That we started out talking about mast cells, which is a lot more biology related, and like conventionally biology related. Mast cell is like a less out there kind of thing. And how does knowing this and understanding this and being able to work on this level with the fascia, the coherence, the charge, the negative charge, which still isn't a thing that most functional medicine practitioners even know or are talking about. How does working on that level that somebody listening might not fully grasp, like, how is this relevant? How does doing that, those things per se, affect somebody whose mast cells are hyperactive?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, you know, I think there's like a lot to, you know, like a lot of layers, right? So there's this physical layer of what's triggering mast cells that we've talked about, right? So there's the toxicants and the pathogens. We talked about the trauma. We talked about vibrational information from, you know, EMF and, you know, essentially the rhythms of life. And then this also, I believe we'll discover the psychoneuroendocrinology, immunology perspective that our thoughts and our emotions can impact our mast cells, right? So all of these different layers, you know, are approached in treatment. And I want to make sure I answer your question. So what part do you want me to go deeper in so I don't go down the rabbit hole?
Just like for somebody out there listening who is that person.
Yep.
Who's the type of person that walks in your door, or they're hypersensitive to things, or they check all the boxes. And when you're talking about mast cell being overactive and like them being too sensitive to things. I know there's a lot of layers you could go, but, from a practical standpoint, this type of down the quantum energy, electrons, fascia, rabbit hole that they might not be familiar with at all. What I'm trying to do with this podcast is put a bunch of stuff in front of people they never heard of before. Because the people that are listening to this are the people who listen to the podcast and read the books and do the things and whatever. And they probably tried XYZ protocols. They probably tried this diet. I'm trying to help them find like a missing piece to their puzzle or a treatment they've never heard of, or a, you know, a concept they don't know about. So like, how does this apply to them in real life? And how, what have you seen happen with people with these kind of treatments? Like you said they hate it. And the sinus one, you said they hate it, but then they ask for it again. So why do they ask for it again? And why do they hate it? Like that kind of thing. Like,
you know, neurotherapy is really profound because it creates movement in the body, right? And so people, you know, who are in my office are often like stuck and stagnant, right? And, you know, compartmentalized. So we're trying to bring movement. We're trying to, you know, bring integration, wholeness, and coherence, you know, to the body. And so neurotherapy is a wonderful tool. But really kind of how I unwind this patient that we've been talking about is through, you know, obviously looking at how to support their mast cells. So I find that we need to do a combination of things. So that could be prescriptions that are compounded like ketotifen, cromolyn, even Claritin or Benadryl. Sometimes it could be a DAO enzyme. It could be butyrate in the form of tributyrin. It could be BPC and KPV.
That stuff is pretty cool, by the way.
Yeah, I love it. I love, it's really good. And then Amlexinox is a peptide that I love that helps us stabilize mast cells. When it works, it works, to things like quercetin or combination herbal formulas. So there's typically some, you know, four or five things I have to do with that. And then what becomes, you know, more and more, you know, important, you know, as we layer things, you know, we need to, you know, stabilize the vagus nerve. So I often use B1, which helps with acetylcholine production. Phospholipids can be very, in microdoses, tolerable for these patients. You know, we also, I love the herbs, trophanthus. A lot of these people have arrhythmias and floppy hearts, you know, that they're all over the place. some people will tolerate vagus nerve stimulators. That can be a little bit more down the road. We do a lot of lymphatic work, so that's where the lymph flow cream that we make comes in. GABA is a stable, mast cells have GABA receptors, so we'll use somnium or other GABA forms to help stabilize. A big thing, especially since COVID, is we need to move the blood. So the blood is more sticky and stagnant and coagulated and less oxygenated. And then the blood vessels are more inflamed and the endothelial glycocalyx, the endothelium, the nitric oxide signaling isn't happening as well. So there's more microcirculation problems on top of already a terrain that has circulatory issues. And so we do a lot of enzymes, and prescribe Artericil. I also do like structured water or coherent water, or when people are stable, they can do red or infrared light. Grounding is often essential for these folks and being in nature. So doing all of, those things just to stabilize. And then, there is this unwinding of kind of, what interference field or what pathogen do we need to kind of unravel, in this order. But it's all interlinked to, of course, their emotional state and their, soul's purpose and, all of that. I find that one of the things that on the flip side of sensitivity is this really beautiful superpower that emerges for the patients who really are, leaning into this experience, and they become very, very in tune with themselves and with life. They can sense and feel things on a level that most people would love to, but it just comes with it.
That you pointed that out. I've found that in working with people in a different way who are the same people, but I'm kind of helping them in a different angle. And when it like clicks for them, like, oh, this is really difficult, and it's also a superpower.
Yes. I have patients that I muscle test, and they'll lay on the table and they'll feel what that, product or something that I put in their field before, they ingest it or use it. They know how that's going to make them, feel. And we have a dialogue because I love to treat those people because they can tell me, what I get closer to that right, treatment at that right time, because they are participating and sharing their sense, their inner navigation system. And, it's hard to sense all of life because it can be, destabilizing, but there is a path where you learn to really, hone in on it and, cultivate it and learn how to use it. And really, it can propel you out of your illness as well. You know this better than everybody. There is, some vulnerability on the, subconscious mind that often, illness will, thrive in a terrain that has a lot of subconscious trauma. And part of that is, bringing that awareness and that integration, or also even ancestral traumas. So there's this, pattern breaker, aspect to the people who are in my office, that they're the pattern breakers for their lineage. And it's not a job that pays well, let me tell you that, but it is, profound in what it can do to the past, present, and future part of their lineage.
It's a rough gig that has a lot of benefits to it, kind of, I can relate and kind of identify with some of that myself. And there's been times where I'm like, man, I had a session once with a really, really incredible person that was one of my teachers, and I got frustrated. I'm like, I'm just sick of having to do this. Like, I'm sick of these things always happening. And she reminded me of like something like that, about breaking cycles and breaking patterns, and that it's like, it takes a lot of energy to change the direction of something that's been going in a direction for a long time. Yeah. And then she just kind of, I was walking out of the room, she just patted me on the back and be like, don't forget you signed up for this.
Like
you chose this, like this was your choice. Like, and I hesitate to ever share stuff like that, because it can feel gaslighty to people. Yeah. And I mean it on a level that's deeper than, I think people take it on. But that, like, the level that I was with her was that level. And she's like, we were talking almost on like a soul kind of level. And she was like, you signed up for this. And the only way to to do the things that you came here to do is to go through the things that you're going through right now. And you signed up for the advanced course. That was her joke. And like, I was like, cool, but I'm tired. And so, all right, I think we got to stop because we'll just keep going and going and going. No,
I want to just echo. And I think that can be a hard thing for a lot of people to hear. But I think also the people who lean into that also, if they, you know, and some people might not even be able to relate, but if we lean into that, we are unlimited creators on some level and that we have the power to get through this, no matter what the mountain is. I mean, I think you have the mountains we've gone through. It's not like I'm just a philosopher here. I've had a brain tumor and a lawsuit, and I've lost many, you know, I've had many miscarriages. I've had to deal with family issues. I'm not like sitting here on a pedestal, like my life is perfect. I'm sitting here from a place.
I wouldn't listen to people who are or have been or whatever, you know, like it's like a rite of passage in this kind of conversation almost.
Yeah. And I sit here with, and I think all of these things that I would not wish on anyone also opened me to be, you know, I think a more grounded and intuitive practitioner that I can hold this space and that I can also say with confidence that I believe anybody can heal from anything and get through anything in their life. It's just surround yourself with people and resources that will tell you that is the case and not the opposite.
Great. Yeah. And that's a good message for those folks. And I'm so careful when I talk about that because it can be taken the wrong way in a lot of ways because people are gaslit and told it's all in their head or that this is their fault or whatever. And that's a different layer that we're talking on. But as always, this was super fun and super interesting. And I love that you tied it together at the end and kind of like an approach of like what you where you start with people with the mast cell, the overstimulated situation, you were generous in sharing a lot of the ways that you work with those people and some of these new treatments. Well, they're not new. They're new to Americans. Neural therapy has been used a really long time in Europe, I've learned, but it hasn't really been used much in the U.S. at all.
I mean, I can count on my hands how many people use it in the U.S.
The only other one I've had talk to me about it that I know in the U.S. is Dr. Gordon.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. And so I just interviewed Nafisa for the first time ever the other day. And it was super fun, by the way. Gordon Medical, Dr. Nafisa.
Yeah, Nafisa worked with us in the beginning. And so, she's been.
They're good. I'm going to California in a couple months and we might go out to dinner with them and see them.
That would be fun.
All right. Well, thank you so much. So somebody found this really interesting. They want to go find you. You share great content all over the place. You have multiple platforms. Like what's the best place for people to go to learn more from you and check out more of your work and get in contact with you?
Oh, thank you. I have a podcast also called The Spectrum of Health. Michael's been on the podcast as well. I also have a clinic in Seattle and I do a lot of telemedicine. It's called Eminence Health. And I share products that I love and the products that I create on iPothecarystore.com. So those are all the ways you can find me.
We'll have all the links down below in the show notes and check that out. So thank you so much, Dr. Christine. It's always super fun. I love our conversations and I learned so much and it things always click when I'm talking to you that like dots click and the things get put together. So it's always really fun.
Oh, thank you so much. I always enjoy our conversations. So thank you.